Excelsior, Spider-Man fans! Welcome to another episode of the Spectacular Webs podcast, right here on Podomatic.com and all the other places you might be listening it to from. Like, oh, I don't know, the Spider-Man crawlspace, just to pimp a few. Not that we're gonna pimp that again. Spider-Man crawlspace! I, of course, am your prom-time host, Thomas Prom-Time Mattis. Yes, your man of 7, 8 now podcasts is here again. Of course, I wouldn't be here without my my PIC, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, everybody.
And since we're on episode 13, which is our season finale, I guess you could say, since the last episode of the first season, we have a special guest with us, a man who has a lot of insight. He's known as GregXB on the Spider-Man forums, or any forums I've seen him on, he's known as GregXB. And that is Greg Bisowski. And I know it's
Bishansky.
Bishansky, thank you.
There's a running gag.
He beshanked me!
I've heard that one before.
Yeah. Now that awkward horribleness is gone... some of you may be wondering what happened to our podcast. Well, you shouldn't be, because this is going to be released in September, not August. And when we recorded our August one, it was in July before what happened in July happened, which I know is very confusing. But basically what happened in July was we ran over our quota. Which, for those who don't know, at Podomatic.com, as part of the free thing, you only get 500 megabytes of... storage space, and 15 gigabytes of bandwidth. And so many people came to download our episode 11, Group Therapy, and Greg Wiseman episode that we ran over the quota. So, I mean, definitely by the time you hear this, I mean, should be up. We're probably going to say something again, but if it ever happens again, basically... yeah, we ran over our quota. We are working on trying to maybe upgrade so we can have some more bandwidth. Even looking into possibly getting our own site. But I can't promise anything right now. But with that being said, we do have a listener, a review from the comic forums on our episode 11 that we want to talk about. This is from Chaos Inc. First off, another great episode. And for one of my favorites from the cartoon... the animation error at the end of the episode with Peter delayed reaction to May's heart attack was due to BS and... what's it?
BS.
Yeah, saying that they had to add a bit in a bit saying May was going to be fine at the end. So it made the scene look a bit clunky since it was obvious. Obviously couldn't reanimate the scene in time, and a bit of extra bit of dialogue made it look weird. It would work a lot better if it ended with MJ saying May had a heart attack and not the going to be fine line. I suppose we could just say Pete was in shock and had a delayed reaction to the news and really hit him when MJ mentioned the hospital. That's what I'm going with.
Whatever. Well, I'd like to know where this guy got this information. I'm sure it's legitimate, but it could not be.
Well, we have Greg, who's our expert, so he could tell us.
I've actually never heard that before. It could be true, maybe it's not true, but I could find out if you want.
And he'll get back to us with the effort. See, that's why Greg's on here. He's our spot-of-the-minute info. I heard the why doesn't he just tell them that he needs money for his aunt complaint for a while, and here's my take on it. In the Lizard episode, it wasn't just that he taken photos and exploited Kurt's condition, but that he ditched the cure effort and didn't help against the Lizard, but sat on the sideline and took pictures. From their point of view, he went to the zoo, took some pictures, sold them, and didn't even bother to see if Kurt was okay. That's their problem, not that he's making money for his aunt, but that he's actively not helping and only thinking of his own problems and not the needs of the others. Yes, he helped with the gene cleanser at the beginning, but as soon as Kurt went Lizard on them... what did Peter do from their point of view? He ran to make money for the situation instead of helping them fix it. That's why they can't trust him. Which, I do believe we actually did tackle this, didn't we, Don?
I think you did. I was more upset with the Connors not calling the cops at that point.
Yeah.
Back in the episode.
Well, and that, it, and I'm sure maybe Greg, because I'm sure Greg's listened to every episode viciously, so he could help me out on this. I believe I did say that, you know, we understand that, but it's why doesn't he say it later? Yeah, this goes beyond just them not trusting him because of the lizard, because they did make up from that.
Boy, he's fine.
You know,
I mean,
you know how Peter is. He's got to carry the weight of the world on his shoulders. He's always been like that.
Yeah. Same sort of thing happens in Persona. From Eddie's POV, all Peter did was sit on the roof and take pictures of the theft from the symbiote and didn't even call the police. Not even sticking around to give the description to the thief. Again, he was only thinking of anything other than money and ignoring everything else. Well, do I ramble on, don't I, Lo?
You sure? No.
Seriously, thanks for writing. No, but that's a good point of view, and I understand that. But at the same point in time, they did make up. He supposedly gave him another chance. And again, it's like I said before in the previous episodes. The conclusion that they were bros, that Eddie and Peter were like brothers. They should know each other better than that. You know, they've known each other for years. So, and nobody has any idea where I'm going with this, so we'll just move on. So let's go right into the synopsis, Don.
But before we do that, shouldn't we explain who exactly Greg Bosanski is? Or let him explain for us, because I think viewers are listening.
That's a great idea. I'm glad I think of it. Before
he didn't play Mary Jane or anything. He has other reasons for being here.
No, I did not play Mary Jane. The talented Vanessa Marshall played Mary Jane. You don't want me playing Mary Jane. Face it, Tiger, you just hit the jackpot.
Right now.
Thank you.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. This is our last podcast. Thank you, bye. No, go on, Greg.
Well, aside from being a huge fan of the show, I've known Greg Wiseman since I first met him in 1998, but I've known him since technically 2001. I'm actually a huge fan of a little show he did called Gargoyles back in 1994. That's what he did. A little bit. He contributed a little bit.
Only wrote the series.
But anyway, I met him at a couple of the conventions, and then I ended up working on staff for one of the conventions, and he's always been very involved with the running of these conventions unofficially, though, and also my very close friend Jennifer L. Anderson is close friends with him, so I guess you could say the stars aligned.
You mean the stars aligned kind of like they did in the Super Friends cartoon? Okay, that's a bad joke.
I've never seen that.
You never saw Super Friends?
It was just like that.
I know of the Super Friends. I never really watched the Super Friends.
Okay, the people that see Super Friends will get the joke. Okay, I'm not saying that was a failed joke. Okay, I refuse.
I've seen Super Friends, and I'll say that's a failed joke.
I hate you, Don.
But yeah, Greg's a great guy. I gave him a terrible ride to the airport once, and he still talks to me, so good guy.
And puts in the cartoons, yes.
Yeah, he puts into cartoons.
Yes. So, now you know why we have Greg here. So, Don is now going to give the synopsis of episode 13, which is Nature versus Nurture. This is the season finale of season 1.
Okay. Let's get right into it. Yes, Nature versus Nurture, episode 13. Villain is Venom. The villain is Venom. We start out with an action scene of Spider-Man taking care of some guys and basically saying, you know, the red and blue costume is back, and so was the classic Spider-Man. He goes straight to Tombstone and tells him to stuff it, as in saying that, you know, he's not going to work for him. The deal is off. And seconds after he jumps out the window, jumping in the window is Venom.
After
the crash, go ahead.
Continue.
You okay, dear?
Yes, honey.
Okay. After the credits, Venom takes up Tombstone's offer, and Tombstone says, "All right, I originally this offer was for Spider-Man, but since you're here, can you kill him for me?" So yeah, Venom's like, "Oh, we were hoping you'd say that."
And then goes off a la Todd McFarlane.
Well, you know, that guy co-created him. Peter visits Aunt May in the hospital, and he's feeling rather bad about how he's kind of had no idea about her condition when she had the heart attack a couple of episodes ago. We cut back to the high school, and he thanks Flash and his friends for trying to be there for him when he was going through his rough patch.
Wait. He thanked Flash? Oh, God. I'm going to be under the bed now, so you continue.
While you're doing that, we cut back to Eddie's dorm room, and Peter's trying to call him up, trying to apologize to him, too, after what happened in the last episode with him getting altercation. Eddie, who is now Venom at this point, says, oh, sure, everything's cool. Hey, we should hang out. And Peter says, oh, sure, let me just ring check on that, because I need to see Aunt May. Then we cut to Peter in his room unmasked. He's about to head over to Aunt May, and he happens upon the gene cleanser from episode 3. And he's wondering, you know, this is all, should I really be Spider-Man now? I mean, I'm not really paying attention to the people who care about me the most. Am I neglecting my true responsibility? Well, he's neglecting something because he's yanked out of the room with his costume on and mask off by a mysterious black web line. Yes, it turns out Venom is in the front lawn and they kind of have a short brawl. I say brawl. It's really Spider-Man getting his butt handed to him and taunting him about how he's going to go after everyone he loves and cares about.
And, of course, nobody in the neighborhood notices this.
Well, everybody's out at the Thanksgiving Day parade, of course.
Of course.
That's where they all are. Venom's heading over to the hospital to who knows what. As Spider-Man chases him, they kind of have a fight along the building. And then as Venom gets away, Spider-Man tries to deduce who he's going after next. And although he guesses Mary Jane, it's actually Gwen. Gwen is a band girl. She's performing in the Thanksgiving Day parade in the high school band.
So what are you saying there, Don? That one time at band camp, Gwen.
I'm not saying anything. I mean, I just find it funny that she's not only is she in band, but she plays the saxophone. I think it's kind of funny. I mean, I was in band, but I played the trumpet though. But that has nothing to do with this. Eventually, we find out that Venom snags Gwen on this I forgot which type of balloon it was. Oh, it wasn't like an ape or a gorilla or something? Yeah, something like that, and she's about to die. Spider-Man tries to save her, and while he's fighting Venom pretty much tells about how he felt abandoned when his parents died, and how Spider-Man's always had his friends and family, Eddie Brock had nothing. And if you listen to the Greg Wiseman interview, it's at this point where you can kind of figure out how the symbiote is twisting Eddie's mind. I didn't before, but now I do. Spider-Man almost saves Gwen, but it turns out that Flash Thompson and the football team end up saving her because they were performing in the parade, too, for some reason. Venom and Spider-Man...
They made the game-winning catch!
They sure did. Touchdown. Venom and Spider-Man get on top of a rooftop where Spider-Man, who's had the crap beat him out of him for the past 20 minutes, says, okay, I give up. And Venom's like, of course you give up. He said, no, I give up to the symbiote. The symbiote wants me, so take me back. Cut to... Cut to the symbiote realizing, wait, you're not really wanting me back. And Spider-Man's like, no, I don't want you back. And the symbiote says, well, you've let me back into your psyche, so I'm going to go back anyway. But he's blocked off by a wall of all the supporting characters / Peter's best friends. And for some reason, this works. And Spider-Man whips it in a garbage bag he found out of nowhere. and dumps the symbiote into a patch of wet cement. Eddie, I should say that Eddie has fallen unconscious at this point and is like lying unconscious. That's the last time we see him for the episode. We'll get to him in the next episode. The day is saved and Aunt May comes back home from the hospital. And while Peter tried to make Thanksgiving dinner, it turns out that Gwen and her father came by to help out with the food, and they all have a big Thanksgiving feast. Peter, Aunt May, Gwen, Captain Stacy, and Dr. Bromwell, who's there for pimping reasons.
Now with the food, I do have to ask. I didn't get to ask it earlier. When he was trying to make the food and he was failing, he says the line, I wonder if Romita's delivers, what was it, turkey cutlets and pizza or something like that?
Turkey and pizza fixings or something.
Yeah. Did you catch that line? That obvious little thing
at
Don Romita Jr.? Or senior?
I mean, he wouldn't catch it.
What?
Yeah. The Romitas, exactly. As Peter is cleaning up the dishes, he sees the gene cleanser again and realizes, you know, I may make a lot of mistakes as Spider-Man, but at least I make up for it by trying to do the right thing and helping people. So he washes it down the drain.
And by pouring the gene cleanser down the drain, he erased his marriage, made a deal with the devil, and killed his only child that's in another alternate dimension. Oh, I'm sorry, wrong show.
What the hell are you talking about?
Kasato, it's not involved with this show.
Thank God.
We wouldn't be talking about it. Okay. What really happens is that as Gwen and her father are saying goodbye, Peter says that, you know, this is amazing, Gwen. You're amazing. I really appreciate this. Thank you. She's like, oh, no problem. Good night. And just before the episode ends, Gwen runs back up the stairs of the steps, Peter's front porch where Peter's standing, and plants him a big wet one on his face as she runs away, and the episode, season, and Peter are left with one word, wow. And that was the finale to season one of Spectacular Spider-Man.
That must have been one hell of a kiss.
And it didn't take them 65 episodes.
Oh.
Was that supposed to be a dig at the 90s show?
No, it was a dig at Gargoyles.
Okay. I'm not seeing every episode of Gargoyles, so I was a little lost.
Episode 65, Goliath and Lisa kiss.
Oh. That hurts. That's a low blow. That is a low blow.
So, gentlemen, nature versus nurture.
Yeah. Well, the hard part is we can't talk much about the second season finale, but I'm just going to say it right here. I enjoyed this season finale more than I enjoyed the second season finale.
Oh, really?
No way. No.
Send all hate mail, Thomas.
Well, I did, and I felt, and part of the reason I think I enjoy it more is because at the end of the day, this feels like a more of a complete closure than what's going to happen in the second season. You know, there's
a good reason for that.
Well, there's a good reason for that. I mean, obviously, but you know, not that I don't want the second season, because there was a lot of awesome stuff we'll talk about in the second season, including like talking about the Christmas episode at Christmas, which is perfect timing for us. And I'm not kidding, our the episode in the Sinister Six fight during Christmas is actually going to fall in December for us, Don. So that should be awesome for us.
That is awesome, actually.
It's yeah. Cool. But it's a... You know, it just feels like this was more of a complete, more of a happy ending to the season than...
It is a more positive ending.
And I always...
What do you think, Greg?
Go, Greg.
It's a more hopeful ending. Obviously, season two ends on a bit of a down note, but at the same time, season two still closes up a lot of threads, which could be reopened in the future, which would have been if it didn't get canceled. But yeah, this is a more positive ending, but I enjoy Final Curtain far more than I enjoy this one. But I'm a big Green Goblin fan. I'm not much of a Venom fan, so take that as you will.
And I think the other reason why I enjoyed it is 90% of this episode is just one big knockdown, dragdown fight. And I love those big, epic knockdown, dragdown fights.
So do I, but I thought there was a better Venom fight in Season 2 than this one. This is a good fight, don't get me wrong, but the one in Season 2 in Identity Crisis was better.
Well, I gotta say that I really enjoy this episode too. I actually have a really big problem with it, but that doesn't stop me from, like, really enjoying watching it. If you were to compare season finales, not spoiling the second one, but if you were to compare them, I mean, this is the first season finale, you know, for the first season. So I think it's, in a way, a little bit unfair to compare them just because, yeah, the same show, but season one was all about kind of building up the groundwork, where season two, I thought, had way less introducing to do and more established, or not even establishing, but kind of like running with the ball. And this one, like, they're basically introducing Venom, and they were introduced in the last episode, but you're basically seeing all what Venom can do. And I think that it's very good with what it does for the most part. But I mean, I like this episode. I don't want to like say I have to like an episode and then dislike another episode. I like both of them.
So do I. I enjoy them both. It's just that also, and I'm sure we'll get to this soon, I enjoy the episode a lot, but some of it is brought down for me by having one of the hokiest scenes.
Say that for me, my friend.
I will. I think we're both thinking of the same thing.
It couldn't possibly have to do with all of Peter's friends now. It...
Friends, quote unquote.
Oh, great. Now I'm going to have to get what I got last episode in stereo. So let's move on to, again, for those who've listened to us, we have our talking points, music, animation, and story. Let's start with music. First talking point is the awesome music that was in the opening scene, the little opening fight between Peter and the robbers. It was just like a rock track, and it just, in my mind, it fit so perfectly, and it felt so awesome along with the great fight choreography that went with that scene.
Am I wrong in thinking that scene was like a riff on like... It was obviously a kind of a callback to the first episode, but I could have swore when I first saw that, and every time I see it, it's been seen somewhere else. Like, was it either in like the first episode or like the trailer for the show?
The trailer for the show, that's where it was, except they changed a little bit. They added Gene DeWolf and Stan Carter, and they changed the ammunition the crooks were using. Yeah.
But, okay, because I remember seeing specifically like him swinging the box behind the dude's head and like, you know, like dropping those guys with the web. I remember specifically some of those beats, and I'm like, you know, God, this is familiar. So, music-wise, I didn't notice anything, but, as usual. But I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, you know, and the thing that's awesome about the scene is because of the last episode with the symbiote, you, especially if you know Spider-Man stories, you start to wonder, wow, here's Spider-Man silent again. Is this the Venom or the symbiote? Is this... And you're just waiting for that other shoe to drop to where, you know, Peter's off in the distance and it changes back into Venom.
Yeah. Yeah, that is there. I mean...
And it never happened, so that's why it's so awesome. Like, wow, that really was Peter. And when it dawns on you, it's like, oh, wow, that was freaking awesome.
I actually have a music note, but...
Oh, go ahead.
I'm not, like I said, I'm really not one to kind of notice music, but I really did notice the music at the end when the symbiote says, you know, oh, these feelings are wrong and everything. Actually, no, it starts off when him and Venom are on the roof. And he says, you know, take me back. This is really, really kind of cool music. Like, it's like, kind of like introspective, excuse me, kind of like really interesting, kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's not your typical kind of orchestral music. It's just kind of like a little melody that kind of plays into like the psychological nature of the Venom character. I thought that was really interesting.
It's quite ominous. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Right. Well, during that scene.
Well, that's a good point, because that's actually the other talking point, is to talk about the fight music between Spidey and Venom, and that was obviously at the end of it, but the music during the fight. Greg?
Oh, that was really cool. It sounded like something out of Batman Beyond, which makes sense. It's the same music people who did Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking of that vibe as well.
Well, you know, and the thing is, I know you've been listening to all our episodes, so for all of which you guys know that we've always talked about the fight music. You know, and yeah, it's because it's just been so good, and you know, that brings up a good point. It's not only the same people that worked on Batman Beyond, it's the same people that worked on the Justice League cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that, you know, they've always done some great fight music.
Yes, indeedy do.
So
I'm blanking out their names. I should know their names. I met them last
summer.
Lolita
Ramonis, Mike Christian, Christopher Carter.
Thank you.
It's those three dudes.
Why do we have you on the show again, Greg?
Good question.
Let's move on to animation. Speaking of question, let's talk about some of the fight choreography, because there were some awesome moves. I mean, in the opening scene itself, do you guys have any moves that you loved?
He liked the
move.
Yeah, that, and I really like when Spider-Man is, like, I think, thrown off or, like, a building or over a building or something, and then, like, Venom webs his boots. Spider-Man tries to, like, web a street lamp and pull it back up, but Venom just yanks him, and Spider-Man, this is more of an animation note, but he, like, slams on the ground on the roof, kind of stands, is kind of propped up by the remote, by the pendulum motion, and then falls back down again. Like, a lot of the animation really added to the moves here, and I liked, I like Venom grabbing him by his face and just punching him like 3 times and then holding him down. That was pretty awesome. I just love how vicious this episode is, because I don't think I've seen this much vicious fighting since the Justice League cartoon, where they could just go at it and punch the crap out of each other. So this was a welcome surprise.
I enjoyed Venom with his arm just in the building, rushing towards Spider-Man, tearing bits of wall out as he...
Oh, yes. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Actually, I have to say some of the moves in it, when they first start fighting in the front yard. Because, you know, there's no swinging, there's no, like, building or anything. It's just their fists. And I, again, like I said, I love it when it's just bare knuckles like that. And in a short space.
The scene really made me think, one, you can have so many great fight scenes with Spider-Man because he can do so many things. But two, the one that you were talking about kind of reminded me of ASM number 39, because in that issue, when the Green Goblin finds out who Peter Parker is, or who Spider-Man is, he follows into his house and literally like jumps him before Peter goes into his house, and they have a fight in the front yard to Aunt May not knowing what's going on. Kind of reminded me of that.
And speaking of references, the balloon battle did remind me a little of Spider-Man 1. It's not an outright movie reference.
Oh, yeah. It's not frustrating and annoying like the rest of them, but there's that's a welcome reminiscence of it. It's not overt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Macy Gray was singing something.
Thank God.
Well, let's move on to Venom suit design. Would you say it's a classic Venom suit design? Because really, this is the first villain, I think, that wasn't done by Ditko or Romita Sr. that was done here.
You might be right. Go ahead, man.
Tombstone wasn't done by Ditko or Romita Sr.
Oh, yes. Whoops.
That's true, but at the same time, that's a fairly... I think that would be a more fairly easy character to do design-wise, since he's mostly suits and he's the mob.
Well, I mean, but he's right, though. Like, he wasn't designed by Dick
Corbett. he's right, but I'm saying... But maybe I should rephrase the question. This is the sort of supervillain in a freaky costume that wasn't designed by Ditko and or Romita Sr. And again, Todd McFarlane probably put him on, well, not the only thing that put him on the map, but it was one of the things that put him on the map.
Amazing Spider-Man 300. Go ahead, man.
Well, it's about the suit's mostly the same. They took away the white squares on his hands. The spider on the chest is slightly different, but I'd say it's about 99% the original look.
Yeah, well, you also have the bulk-up look, which is always one of the things that I think makes Venom so menacing, is that he's so bulked up that he's just this powerhouse of a character.
Mm-hmm. He's actually a lot more... This actually is a lot more akin to, like, the very first Venom design, because, as the years go by, Venom's always had this elongated jawline, this huge mouth. With this one, it just kind of has, really nasty teeth, and it goes back to, the first appearance where he was just, a huge, bulky, grinning Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And not what he evolved to eventually.
And that's what I like about it, because I think it shows, again, the symbiote was, and I love the fact that I'm able to say symbiote this episode, for the episode that hasn't been released yet. the symbiote was so long, or was connected to Peter for so long, that it makes sense that when they sort of formed the suit around Eddie, that it would be in the form of Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they don't actually explain that in the cartoon. I think that's the way it can be interpreted. It can also be interpreted as Eddie mocking him. For just because, you're Spider-Man, so I'll be Spider-Man 2. So like that, there are different ways to look at it, but they're all valid, I would say. I mean, it's not like it has to be one way or another.
Well, since we're on suit design, let's move right into story and talk and discuss the differences and similarities between this Venom and the one in the comics. You were waiting for this, weren't you?
Actually, no, I was waiting to talk about the ending, but I remember, okay, before... the Greg Wiseman interview, which everybody's heard of by now, or at least they should. I really had no idea what the motivations were of Eddie Brock. Now I've been sat down and explained to by Papa Wiseman. I gotta say that similarity and differences between this Venom and, because obviously Venom started out as an out and out villain. Then he kind of went into the whole Lethal Protector thing where he's, you know, I'll kill bad guys but save innocent people. But I mean, this one, what got my goat is that he would try to kill Aunt May and Gwen, and Eddie Brock is not like, he's not like somebody who just met them. He's known them for like years, like over a decade or something. So that kind of always threw me off. But upon being told that the symbiote has twisted his already kind of like
twisted logic,
not so straight thinking, then it doesn't really bother me as much anymore. How did you think about it? What did you think about it, Greg?
Well, I've never been too big a fan of Venom in the comics, so almost anything was an improvement. Mostly because for me, Venom's motivation in the comics never made sense. I'd elaborate, but JR already put a great essay about this.
JR Venomger, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Dark Side of the Spider. I just never got his whole protect the innocence, and I was innocent once. I just like the idea that this guy was crazy to begin with. I mean, you look at Eddie Brock, and you think, yeah, him tackling Electro and the Lizard is somewhat heroic, but if you think back, that's crazy. The guy clearly had issues.
Well, and you know, the thing is, that's why I think for some people this one works better. And if you read the Eddie Brock and the Venom in the Ultimate Spider-Man universe, this is a lot more akin to the Ultimate Spider-Man Venom in how twisted the Eddie is there. You know, how he, you know, he's nice to people, but he tends to use them more often.
That Eddie tried to date rape Gwen.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Well, it's also the very personal hatred he has with Peter, because the second both Ultimate Venom and this Venom get a symbiote, they go after, well, not the second, but like they pretty much, the first thing the major thing they do is go after Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, he hates, this is the first villain that really hates Peter and not Spider-Man. And so that comes out in the violence and the fighting and everything.
Yeah, well, and going back to Ultimate Comics, it goes back to the other thing that I saw a connection with. You know, and yeah, it is Eddie, it is the symbiote twisting Eddie's logic in the show, but he's saying sort of the same things that, you know, the Eddie and Ultimate Spider-Man when he was Venom, you know, the fact that, you know, Peter had a family and I didn't, you know. He had people to be with, I was always alone. Those same...
That always confused me. I remember watching it today, and I was like, you know, okay, so did he grow up in a foster home or something? I mean, they were like, he was always so alone, but he's like only a couple years older than Peter. He had to be with somebody. He didn't grow up in the streets.
I'm sure he was in a foster home, which is not the same as a loving family most of the time.
Yeah. But, you know, it hits those same beats that, you know, that... And so, again, this I think is a perfect example of where there was a lot more of the Ultimate Comics influence in the character than there was the actual Amazing Spider-Man 616 Universe Comics influence here. And I actually liked it because I love the Ultimate Comics Venom.
It was
that's interesting.
Yeah, it was Ultimate Eddie, but 616 Symbiote.
Yeah.
And brought in the 90s way. But I also like the way that, like you said before, Venom's really bulky and it's powerful. And I think that's like a very iconic visualization of the character. So I like the fact that this Eddie Brock retains the 616 physique.
Yeah, well, I think more importantly, it's the Ultimate Eddie Brock, but it's the 616, more important, the Todd McFarlane version of Venom. And that's the iconic version, which makes sense because that's when you look back at the characters, even the characters that had the most design change, they still had a lot of attributes that tied them back to their most iconic states.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, this one has the slime and the long tongue. I think that was added by Larson.
What do you think of the mouth and the gut?
Oh.
That was awesome. that was great. I love that.
Well, it was a good bit, too. God, don't you ever shut up. Oh, you can dish it out. Whip. And then the second mouth,
though, dig it. That's that because that rings so true of Venom. That and the Guess Who thing, it was like, you know, you could easily see him doing this.
Am I the only one who looked at that and said, out of context theater?
Yes.
Nice.
God, there are so many jokes that could be taken with that scene. Oh.
And I know none of them.
Including, I've already thought up like three that involve Monty Python. Monty Python scenes.
Guess who? The Spanish Inquisition.
Thank you. We've talked about it before, but again, let's talk about the Spidey Venom fight a little bit more. I mean, did you like the setup of how it led? Because it starts in the yard, it then goes towards the hospital, then towards the Macy's Day Parade, and every different place it went to brought different elements to the fight. Again, the yard, it was more punching and dodging in a small enclosed area where there was no swinging. At the hospital, it was more fighting along the wall. And then towards the parade, there was a lot more swing combat.
Well, I got to thinking back to, like, in the 90s show and in the comics, Venom would, like, repeatedly go to the front door, like, hi, can Peter come up and play? Kind of, like, goad him that way. At this one, it's like, you know, if you're gonna fight after the guy you think is your worst enemy, he basically pulls a scorpion and for more combat, like, get over here, and yanks him out the window with his mask off. I thought that was awesome.
Okay, now somebody has to do that. Somebody has to make a clip of Peter being yanked with the words, get over here.
I have a YouTube account. I'll do it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Hey. Get on that, intern.
And as for the fights, that's one of the things I like about this show is that most of the fights don't take place on one set piece. In most cartoons, when a hero fights a villain, it's usually one set piece. This series, they're all over the city.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about that. It is a thing of where there is multiple set pieces for every fight. You know, we'll go back to group therapy. You know, the first fight happens in Times Square. The second fight starts on a street outside of Central Park and eventually leads into Central Park. The Green Goblin fight in...
I thought the Green Goblin fight was
Both of them, but the first Green Goblin fight starts in the ballroom and then goes outside and goes through a construction site in the city. Then the second one, it starts in a warehouse and goes outside the warehouse. You know, they're...
Wait till the Christmas episode.
Yeah.
It is
something to talk about with this series that it's not just one set piece. It's multiple set pieces. And that brings a whole huge set of realism for this cartoon or animation.
It's innovation, yeah.
Vic Cook loved his long fight sequences.
And he also loves his long chase sequences, as I can see in Scooby-Doo Mystery Inc.
Was he in the show too?
Yeah, he's producer on the new Scooby-Doo show.
Is that the one where Shaggy is with Velma?
Yeah.
What?
I'm not seeing it, but that's what I heard from it.
Yeah, Velma and Shaggy are supposedly in a relationship in that show.
In the back of the show.
I heard Freddy's an autistic savant.
all he thinks about is traps. Okay, entire show. Okay, we're gonna like peel off a little from the main topic here. We apologize, but in the new Scooby-Doo show, all Fred does is think about building traps. Daphne's always trying to get Fred's attention, and Velma gets still the smart one, but it's trying to get Shaggy to open up in their relationship, and of course.
Oh my god!
Velma is not straight! What the hell?
I love, this is the new Scooby-Doo show. Velma wants to try to open up with their relationship. It's a freaking soap opera.
Oh, better yet, not only does Shaggy come off as a very smart person, smarter than Fred.
What?
But he's worried about the what people will think about their relationship with Velma.
Oh my
god. He's dating a lesbian. What the hell?
Dude, he dated a dog for like 30 years. There are worse things.
Oh, good. No, it's a very good...
Back on topic.
But, well, yeah. So it is somewhat on topic because Victor Cook is... was he a producer alongside Greg Wiseman on the show?
Yeah, Greg was in charge of story, Vic in charge of animation.
That was in charge of animation, so, and Vic's on that show. And so, again, both Greg and Vic, we do definitely want to support all their projects, so.
It's like Bruce Timm and Paul Dini.
Basically. Yeah. Paul Dini, speaking of.
Alan Burnett, not Paul Dini. Yeah. Alan Burnett was Tim.
Yeah.
Dini just gets more credit than
him. Yeah. So, speaking of Dini, on the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. We'll actually talk about that later in this episode for a reason. I'll let you know. But back...
Really? Another surprise, folks.
The full of surprises. Let's talk on to the third talking point. Peter's debate on whether or not he should beat Spider-Man. I mean, we've seen this before, but... It was, I think, really poignant because, again, because of the situation with the symbiote, it really put into perspective... I think for him, whether he should be Spider-Man or not, because look what it, I mean, the ultimate thing, it got Aunt May hurt. Almost killed.
Yeah, that wasn't his fault. I actually thought that the whole, oh, should I give up Spider-Man thing, I can see where they were going, and I can understand it. I actually understand it a lot better than the last time they pulled that stunt, but I thought it was a little contrived to wrap up how he was feeling in the season. Like, oh, the season finale, so we have to have him doubt himself again. I thought it was a little too contrived, but that was my opinion.
Well, they didn't really do it in season two, but I have no doubt that they would have done the Spider-Man No More story eventually.
Yeah. I mean, with the way it was going in certain, especially in the second season, you knew that Greg probably wanted to pull that story. I just think he never got the chance to. So, all this is really just teaser for that.
Are you saying that this whole plot line is like a teaser for something that would never happen?
It may have been. I mean, look at the Master Planner story arc. I mean, you didn't have Aunt May sick again. That would have been really stupid after this story.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in the comic books, she was in the hospital, but that was the second time she's been in the hospital. And then even in the Dicko run, so and that story was all your wholly original.
Yeah, but the Master Planner story in this takes place a month after.
Yeah. And that's true, and the difference, I'm sorry, Don, the difference between this Aunt May and the Aunt May that was in the 6161 universe is that the one...
50 years.
the 616 universe one is a old decrepit bag that needs to die.
You're sorry? Yeah, it's like I disagree with that.
Ugh. What did she find? The secret to life?
the magic youth ball or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I could make a you know JJ senior.
No, this is a family podcast. Damn it!
It is.
It's supposed to be. Because we're so family friendly. But speaking of being family-friendly, let's talk about the Peter and Gwen moments.
Okay. That's a nice segue. You do it. You do it. Well, there's one like, there's like the one in school, and there's the one at the end where she, I was about to say she nuts up. She ovaries up, I guess.
It's not obvious and that she likes him at all.
Well, if you noticed, there was a big, like, you know, in the school thing, she's like, oh, I'm sorry, Peter. If there's anything we can do, she puts her hand on his shoulder. And Liz is like, uh-uh, girlfriend, are you dead? I'm going to hit you.
Oh, my God.
This entire relationship proves my entire philosophy on the sexes. Men are idiots. Women are insane.
Thank you. I can't believe Don just said that.
Well, it's not a line-for-line dialogue, but it's a look that says it all.
And I
need
sure
to breathe now.
I am sure it was intended. Greg Wiseman has said that, in his opinion, this entire show is about sexual repression.
No.
What?
He said that. Think about it.
Where did he say that?
At a convention.
Is that why we don't see any sex in the show?
Probably.
I'm sure that's the only reason why.
And this will be the last thing the time Greg ever says anything in front of you.
Hot man, Dr. Bromwell, getting it on.
Dr. Bromwell gave me a ride.
Oh, God.
This episode's gone to hell real quick.
Wow. Did this episode take a left turn and out?
Well, Dr. Bromwell, let's talk about that guy for a second, because he was, like really trying to get in, like on his granny panties and stuff.
Oh!
So oh, dude, how are you getting home? Oh, my nephew's picking me up. Well, he's 2 seconds too late. Let me take you home. Dr. Bromwell here.
Well, in season two, he drops in on her on Valentine's Day. Something's going on.
Yeah. But no,
he needs.
But you had that Gwen moment to try to put things back on track from this.
Like you are right now.
Yeah. I think the thing in the school, you know, it was very obvious. It also again showed, you know, again it was MJ that was pushing her to make to say those that were not pushing her, but you know, who gave her the encouragement to go up and talk to him. So again, you also got to see some of MJ's character, as we'll talk about in a little bit. And then, of course, you had the kiss at the end. And again, the hero should get a kiss at the end.
No matter who it's from. Well, this episode was like one of those. It's not like The Return of the King where it had a bunch of endings. I thought it was going to end the episode. I thought the episode was going to end when Aunt May was like, actually, I made a cookbook. Do you think you can get another one? And then I thought it was going to end when he's like, you know, Spider-Man is not a curse. He's great. And then it ends with, you know, like there's like three different endings to this episode. And The true ending was, because I remember when I first saw this, I was like, you know,
we collected 100 coins and stomped 10 Goombas, so we got the super super secret ending.
Yeah,
that is.
I remember first watching it and like you know, okay, something's gonna happen. I can just smell it. Something's gonna happen. Ah, she kisses him. Oh, I have to wait for the next season.
And by the way, if anybody can figure out what Flash game I just referenced to. One, you're a sick, sick boink, and two, I will be buying you something because you deserve points for it.
I'm a sick but I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm a sick boink, and I don't know what that means either.
Let's talk about the supporting cast of characters, the supporting cast character moments that were... Let's face it, everything that happened in this episode with the supporting cast is set up for next season.
How you figure?
Well, you know, again, MJ, you know, trying to get Gwen to be with Peter. You know, it really sets her up for what she's going to be for most of the second season, which is the friend that everybody goes to tell her their problems to. More of Flash's friendship with Peter is going to happen in the second season, where he's more of a reliable person.
Ooh, should we comment on it? Because before we start recording, Greg posted a link about Wiseman's views on the Flash and Peter relationship. Should we bring it up now?
If you guys want, sure.
And I quote, here's my thinking. Peter and Flash were best friends at age 4. Then Peter's parents died. Flash's dad was a soldier and then a cop. Young Flash couldn't deal with that being that close to death. He didn't want to play with Peter anymore, and his own young mind, he had to find a way to justify / rationalize his decision that wasn't about his peers. So he convinced himself that Peter was a stuck-up egghead who deserved to be dumped as a friend. By the time we meet Flash and Peter at the beginning of their junior year of high school, Flash's mindset is fairly well entrenched, and the original reason for it is lost to him. Somewhere deep down, he knows better, and giving enough time in episodes, we would have eventually dealt with this objectively in the series. So yeah, there was more of like the whole, you know, Peter thanking Flash, and Flash is like, don't mention it. And I like that, because I was like the Peter and Flash relationship in the comics where they became friends, so that was good to see.
Well,
I actually would like Flash in this cartoon as well.
Well, it works in the...
Flash is great in this show.
Well, it works so great in the comics because there's all those years of continuity and stories that build their friendship, and you can, they become adults... And they become, you know, used to their responsibilities, and it's like we can't be Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi forever. To make a Star Wars,
Spider-Man loses his powers every now and then. Flash loses his legs every now and then.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. According to Joe Quesada, I've said a bad thing. Peter being an adult is a bad thing. Because we know how hard, you know, how horrible it is to have all those nasty responsibilities. But let's move on.
Spider-Man's about youth, not responsibility.
Mm-hmm. You also had, I mean, and it really started with the last episode. I mean, we saw beginnings of it, but you alluded to Liz's little evil eye earlier, which really sets up for the relationship that's going to happen in the next season. So you had all these different character points. And nobody agrees with me. Okay.
No. That's a catchphrase, but no, I mean, that was kind of obvious. Especially the fact that after Gwen puts her hand on Peter's shoulder, Liz takes Peter's hands, and then Gwen takes Peter's hands too. But Gwen's cute because she her glasses kind of shrink down. She kind of pushes her glasses up with her hands still on Peter's hands. That was really nice animation and body language. I think Liz actually walks away after that, if I remember correctly.
Well,
because it also, Gwen is such a threat.
It also shows just how much more aggressive Liz is at pursuing a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has a lot more
experience.
Mm-hmm. Darn it, I had a joke here, but I can't remember the name of the game. You know, where people, they decide who gets to go first in a baseball game by putting their hands on the bat so they reach the top. I had a joke that sort of segued that. But...
Now we just have a blooper.
Yeah. No, that's staying in.
Of course it is.
Everything else stays in. So, that's it. Let's finish off with our favorite lines.
Wait. We missed one thing.
What was that?
The bloody ending.
The Wall of Friends.
Oh. Okay, I'll let you guys talk about that since you guys want. I thought you guys would have talked about that when we were talking about the fight, since really that's where it fits in, but... Yeah, we did.
Well, we were talking about something good, so we didn't want to soil it. So, you know what? I had my say on the last episode, and you know, you hear me spitting blood. Then, Greg, you're the guest. Why don't you lead us off into what we're talking about?
Oh, joy.
Okay, so Peter offers himself up to the symbiote to take him back as its host. The symbiote
sexually,
sexually, yes. The symbiote leaves Eddie, briefly bonds with Peter, and. Then the Wall of Friends comes up, and the symbiote can't take hold of him. And I understand what they were going for. It was sort of a takeoff of the ending of Amazing Spider-Man issue 317. But that was just the hokiest moment in the entire series. Intellectually, I get what they were going for. I don't think the idea was bad, but it just wasn't executed.
Well, it's obvious because Eddie is all about, we were so alone. Don't leave me. I am alone. And Peter's like, he doesn't feel alone because he has friends. Where this fails is that A, half the people he hardly communicates with. B, you're saying
wait. He communicates with Black Cat all the time. We just can't see it because it's a family show.
Well, by that token, he also communicates with Dr. Bromwell and Hobie Brown as well. I mean, I'm saying it's just so dumb. Like, why
with anyone yet?
Hold on, Rob doesn't communicate with anybody the entire show. Does he have one line?
Exactly. So why is?
And I'm not even talking about this season. I'm talking about both seasons.
Well, that was a running gag. I mean,
It almost makes me wonder, and I know this team is too good to do that, but it almost makes me wonder if they just. Grab random character models and stuck them in there to fill out the scene.
I honestly think they did that. I don't think they're both doing that because they did it last
episode. And if they were going to do that, they may as well have thrown in Norman Osborn. He was in episode 12. Actually, they should have because.
Well, they did in the last season. They did in the last episode. Norman was in there.
That actually makes sense.
And you forget Symbiote. Peter has so many friends. Like Osborn.
Yeah, and I mean, that would make sense considering. What happened, you know, Norman Osborn, Peter did look up to Norman Osborn as a good guy.
Makes more sense than Sally being there, but I guess Sally showed...
Well, you know, that was because Sally was a potential suspect as the Green Goblin.
No, she won it! Okay. We let that well run dry. My main thing is that you're saying Spider-Man... Okay, in the comics where this rips off, he does that, but the strain of trying to bond with both Eddie and Peter knocks everyone out, and the symbiote is weakened because of that. Here is... Oh, we can't get Peter because, oh, he has a lot of friends in his mind and not in real life. So you're basically telling me that Spider-Man can't beat things because
I think what they were
he needs friends to do it.
I think what they were going for was that Peter in his mind has his own support network. He is not alone, so there was no negative energy in his mind at that point for the symbiote to feed off of. Like I said, I understand intellectually what they were going for. I just think it was executed in the hokiest manner possible. And it frustrates me because I've known this team for years and I've never seen them do anything this hokey, and I hold Greg to much higher standards than that. Greg, if you're listening, I love you, but I hold you to higher standards than this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like he wrote it. I mean, well, he did write the last episode, which I hated it, but it's not like...
Oh, he was in charge of this. It was his fault.
It's not like these guys are horrible people. It's just that something that we didn't care for. Also...
Hence why this is a podcast of opinions. What a shock.
I don't know. I lost my train of thought. I was just bemoaning this whole idea that no. Okay.
Well, let's put it this way. At least I'm sure Greg Weisman appreciates our opinions, unlike certain editors and chiefs of certain comic book companies that
trust me, this he appreciates my honesty. He doesn't need me kissing his ass all the time. I know I do it a lot, but when he does something wrong, I call him on it because. That way, when I compliment his stuff, he knows I'm sincere.
Yeah, but like I'm saying, it's not like, certain editors and chiefs of certain comic book companies that, if you say anything negative about a book, they throw a fit and you're the most spiteful, hateful person and you're not a real comic book fan. Not that we're going to name said editors and chiefs on this show because we're not that.
Stan Lee, that bastard.
Yeah. That bastard.
That bastard.
Okay, real quick. My main thing is that, spoiler alert, you end the series with Peter feeling alone and desperate, but you end the season with him feeling all fine and dandy. Why not just have the symbiote jump him then? For all we know, that's what happens after the final curtain. So you're kind of missing your messages here, Kevin Hopps.
Well, again, they thought they were going to
get another
season.
Now that we burned
season,
every bridge.
So. Kevin Hopps is a great guy. I had lunch with him once. Good guy.
Okay, I like this episode. I like everything involved in here. I just hate that ending. Like Nature versus Nurture, this episode. I like it, but that seriously guts it for me.
Does anybody hear a roaring sound from my mic?
Yes.
I actually hear a buzzing sound.
Yeah, that's the guy next door with the lawnmower. I apologize.
It's the writer.
It's Greg Weisman and Kevin Hopps coming to kill me.
Kill you.
But, we're at the homework. So, let's move on to favorite lines.
My favorite line would have to be Tombstone's "I don't micromanage." I don't know why, I just enjoy that line. He's looming over the pool table. He doesn't care what Venom does as long as he does his job. Tombstone's just so cool on this show.
Tombstone's awesome.
Well, part of that is the coolness, that even though it was a different voice actor, the coolness from the first episode of it being Keith Davis.
Keith David only did the very first episode. Every other episode is Kevin Michael Richardson.
But I'm just saying that the awesomeness of Keith David just rubbed off on the character and stayed with it.
Yes, it did. Kevin does a great Keith impression.
He really does.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
Well, better than him going, "Hey, y'all!"
Good God. Quickly before Thomas screams again. I actually like the line Gwen has. I think Peter's like, "Oh, are you okay?" She says, "Oh, yeah. I really want to come over and, I'm glad we made this food." Before the post-traumatic stress kicked in. Because I was imagining her like in a corner shaking after what happened to her. It's kind of funny. I thought it was a good line.
Do you have any more?
I don't think.
Well, I'll go. I have three. as I usually try to get at least three. My first one is, I got a covered Aunt May. I'll prepare the feast. How hard could it be? Which is definitely more of a visual joke considering what happens afterwards, which it's cliche, but I love cliche.
I appreciate that one because I can barely make a pot of spaghetti.
Number two is, there she is, and with Flash. Ew. Well, at least Flash isn't evil. Okay, at least he's not possessed by an evil symbiote. At least not as far as I know.
That's my second choice for favorite line also.
And he's also serious when he's
yeah,
like,
serious.
He's not even joking. He's like, not that I know of.
Just like, wow.
At any moment, Flash will turn into a villain.
And the third one is, come on, Venom. Is that the best you got? I'll stick with the red, torn, and blue. Oh, we can shred way more than the suit. Shoot, hits it. There's on the back. Now, shouldn't y'all have seen that coming? Which just comes off as, whenever I hear that, all I want to hear in the background is, da 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 da. Because it's so Looney Tunes.
You're going to insert those.
And since you ended that with a Venom line, we've got to give props to Ben Diskin because every time he performed Venom, he would lose his voice for an entire week. He had to do every line as Eddie, then he had to do it again as Venom, and they would have him doing this for 4 hours, and he would lose his voice for a week.
I didn't know that. That we definitely have to go. You know, we didn't talk about Ben Diskus. And I apologize for that. We usually talk about the voice actors way more as I stall to bring up a certain site so we can talk about them.
Wikipedia/IMDb. Oh, actually, I like the line, you know. Eddie, please, I got a saber. Oh, you'd love that, wouldn't you? To be your hero. But you're the villain here. And this reminds me of Marvel vs. Capcom when he starts in Venom and it's like, villain! That made me smile.
Yeah, but no, that's I'm looking. Wow, he appeared in Wonder Years, Hey Arnold, Kindergarten Cop. God bless his soul for that. I mean, probably best known for a lot of us as number one and number two in Kids Next Door. And nobody.
Never watched it.
Oh, who was it? No, Ben Diskin. Wasn't he like a. He wasn't Kid Next Door. Was he number? He wasn't number four. He was.
He's number one and number two.
His number four was D. Bradley Baker.
Oh God, this will probably bring down a lot of. Now a lot of comic fans won't like him anymore because he's apparently done anime too.
So is Steve Bloom. People love Steve Bloom.
I was making a joke on like half our Spider-Man crawl space.
Well, Jason is not half. He likes anime.
Reserve, yeah.
But, but definitely we do want to give a big thanks for Ben. If that's what's happening, props to him for that.
And in his spare time, he would teach karate and he would yell at the kids in his Venom voice. True story.
I was going to say, that's not true.
No, it is true.
Oh, man. Well, at least he, you know, maybe he should take presence in that he only had to do Venom. It wasn't like he had to do a Dragon Ball Z yelling session. I've heard stories of, because like from Scott McNeil, about people actually passing out and having to go to the hospital because they had to yell for so long.
I probably shouldn't laugh at that. I'm especially Christopher Sabat, like, and I just falling over.
So that's it for it. We do have one more little special announcement. That special announcement is, ladies and gentlemen, is that we have decided that we are going to be watching the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon when it comes out this following fall. Is it next fall or is it this spring? It's coming out.
Isn't 2011?
I think it's spring 2011. It's coming out. If it's good, that will be what we will be covering when we finish with Spectacular Spider-Man. of course, maybe we'll get some good news and that Spectacular Spider-Man will be repicked up and we'll get a third season, but...
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. But, that's not gonna happen. Yeah, a lot of you, though, have asked if we will also be reviewing that. And so since so many of you asked that, we're going to give it a watch, and if it's good, we'll be reviewing it. So that's our special announcement. So,
yes, our
announcement. Yeah, our announcement. So, of course, we also have many podcasts. Don, do you want to plug yours?
Oh, yeah. ASM Classics with John Wilson and Bertone. We've been on a hiatus because we had scheduling problems with, you know, recording the next episode, but we are still alive and expect some new stuff like really soon. I can guarantee that. Also, Clone Saga Chronicles, the last episode, the latest episode after the Great Debate has been recorded, and that should come out any day now. That'll probably be out by the time you guys hear it. I'll probably most certainly be out by the time you guys hear this, both this and ASM Classics, so stay tuned to those.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was a little predisposed. I was looking at a button that says, "Do not meddle in the affairs of dragons, for you are crunchy and go well with ketchup."
Nice. I've got one of those.
I love convention.
Trying to remember.
But speaking of which, I have, what was it, 7, 8 podcasts now. By the way, I'm not kidding about that. First and foremost, I have my Thomas's Prerogative, which is my weekly blog. And more importantly, as of this recording, I went out and MetroCon is come and go, and I went to that MetroCon where I did interviews and recorded panels and stuff. And so if you stay tuned to the Shaft website, you should be seeing interviews with people like Scott McNeil and Robert Axelrod and Spike Spencer and Kirby Morrow, Yaya Han, which is one of the greatest cosplayers out there. Don has seen her, so he knows that she is good. Right, Don?
I beg your pardon?
Yaya. Yaya Han.
Oh, yeah. I did listen to that. I was amused. Mm-hmm.
So those should be coming out soon as of this recording, which is like the beginning of August. So by the time you get this in September, they definitely should be out. I have Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast. By the time this recording, we should have released, in August, we are doing two movies and one podcast where we'll be reviewing both Ghidorah the Three-Headed Dragon and Godzilla vs. Monster Zero. And we'll be doing it with our good friend Kyle Yost of Kaiju Cast. We have Hexcast, a podcast where we review every episode of Jim Bale and Taro, Witch of the Black Rose. We really haven't gotten any episodes started yet because Lori, my co-host, has been on vacation and she won't be back until September 1st. So September 1st will be our first actual review issue. So we can't wait.
Thank God.
I hate you so much right now. Prepare to be hexed! No.
Oh, yes.
I'm part of the Capes and Feathers podcast, which is on Walter Bowman's TS Champ podcasting network, where it's a Justice League cartoon podcast, where we review every episode of the Justice League cartoon. In August, we will be covering the Aquaman episodes, if Walter ever gets back online. I am also now part of the Anime Asylum podcast, which is a new podcast I started with my friend Josh Dunham. We're both anime fans, and basically we have a topic, and we just argue about it. That's the podcast. It's us arguing about our podcast. Hopefully, I will have a link on the site so you can go to our first episode in which we argue about the anime Gurren Lagann. He thinks it's awesome. I think it's the worst crap of animation to come out in the past 15 years. And that's it for our podcast. Of course, we always plug our friends, Brad Douglas and the Spider-Man Coral Space. We wouldn't be anything without him. Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box and Tales from the JSA and Back to the Bins and whatever that other Superman podcast is, which is escaping my mind right now, which makes me feel bad.
From crisis to crisis.
The Shaft podcast, which you find at www.animeshaft.com. the major spoilers podcast, and of course their beloved critical hit podcast that's over on there. Clone Saga Chronicles by our friend Bertoni, the Batgirl to Oracle Barbara Gordon podcast by our good friend Stella, Kaiju Cast by Kevin Yost, Nostalgia Critic, Tutu Freaks, the 2-in-1 Showcase. All of these are our friends. Go check them out. Don, do you want to tell them where they can find the show in its forums?
You can find the show routinely at Spectacular West Podcast at podmatic.com. You can also find it on, I think most people find it on SpidermanCrawlspace.com and comment on there. You can also I think that's where everybody finds it, if I were to assume. You can also comment on the forums. In the comic forums, we have our own little corner. And where I put the episodes up there, and you can make topics, ask us questions, you know, basically talk about the show there. So you can do all those things. Just rewind and write that down and go there.
And you can also leave emails for the show at www.spectacularwebs@yahoo.com. And of course, like I said, leave iTunes reviews. So that's it for this season finale of Spectacular Webs. We will be back with another new episode of Spectacular Webs next month. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, and all you other spider fans, stay spectacular. Living on the edge, fighting crime, spinning webs, swinging from the highest ledge, he could leap above our head. Looking up with no surprise, arriving in the speed of time. Spectacular, spectacular, Spider-Man. Spectacular, spectacular, Spider-Man. Spectacular.
What did you say your name was?
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Which one of you is the captain?
Do we violate the treaty, Captain?
Red alert! All hands, battle stations!
What are you scratching at?
Correct. Can we just get down to it, please?
Prepare to attack. All hands, battle stations.
No!
Monthly Mondays, available the second Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.